Welcome back, everyone. Today we're going to dive into something something you probably use every day without even realizing it. Translation. And specifically, the skills you need to actually do it well.
Right.
So we've got some great source material to work with. We've got Dr. George Payton's lecture notes on Bible translation.
Yeah.
Some insights from the American Translators Association. So we're going way beyond just, you know, knowing two languages.
Yeah.
We're going to try to uncover what it really takes to make words sing in a whole new language.
Yeah, you hit on something really important there. You know, there's this assumption that translation is just swapping words, like a simple equation.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so much more nuanced than that.
Right.
You know, translation competence, and that's the official term. It's about bridging entire worlds of meaning, not just vocabulary.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I can read a recipe in French, maybe even follow it if I'm lucky.
Yeah.
Could I translate that recipe so that someone else could capture the same flavors, the same techniques, and even the same feeling the original chef intended?
Mm.
Probably not without some serious skills, right?
That's a great analogy. And it highlights the first essential ingredient, language competence.
Okay.
It might seem obvious, but there's a lot more to it than just being bilingual.
So break it down for me. What does true language competence actually look like in the world of translation?
It's fluency in every sense of the word, reading, writing, speaking, and listening.
Yeah.
And you need that level of mastery in both the source language, the one you're translating from,
right,
and the target language, the one you're translating into.
Okay, that makes sense. But here's where my brain starts to glitch.
Mm.
What about Bible translation, where the source language is often ancient Greek or Hebrew?
Yeah.
I took Spanish in high school, not Aramaic. How do translators even approach that?
That's where it gets really fascinating. You don't necessarily need to be fluent in ancient Greek in the sense of, you know, casual conversation, but you need something even more powerful, a deep analytical understanding of the text. This means mastering tools like commentaries and exegesis, which is basically the art of unpacking a text's true meaning. It's like being a textual detective.
So less about chatting with Plato over coffee, more about deciphering ancient clues.
Exactly. Now imagine you're building a house.
What? Really?
Would you rather start with a pile of lumber and no blueprints?
Right.
Or have some architectural plans to guide you? That's where languages of wider communication like Spanish come in.
Hold on. How does Spanish help if we're talking about translating from, say, ancient Hebrew?
It's all about building on what already exists. There are often Bible translations already available in these widely spoken languages,
okay,
which act as a framework. It's like having a partial blueprint for your house, giving you a head start.
That makes a lot of sense. Dr. Payton also mentions English as a key skill for Bible translation teams.
Right.
Is it just because English is so widespread these days?
That plays a part, but it goes deeper than that. Think of English as a massive library filled with translation resources, dictionaries, commentaries, scholarly articles. Having at least one team member fluent in English allows the team to tap into this wealth of knowledge.
Okay, so English is like the secret decoder ring for the world of translation.
You could say that.
But we've been so focused on the source languages, I almost forgot about the other side of the equation. What about the target language?
Yeah.
The one the translation is actually going into. How crucial is competence there?
Oh, it's absolutely essential, particularly when it comes to writing. We often take writing for granted, but it's a skill honed over years. It's structured, it's formal, and it requires a deep understanding of grammar and syntax,
right,
which can be very different from spoken language.
You're totally right. I remember struggling with essays in school, and that was just English.
Yeah.
But this begs the question. What happens when the Bible's being translated into a language that's never been written down before?
Hmm.
Or a language that has very little existing literature? How do you even begin to create a written form?
It's a bit like being a linguistic pioneer, charting new territory. Translators can actually help develop writing systems for unwritten languages.
Wow.
This involves careful observation of how the language is spoken,
uh-huh,
identifying patterns,
right,
and creating a system of symbols that captures the sounds and structure. Even basic grammatical knowledge becomes super valuable in these situations.
It's not just translating. It's almost inventing a written form at the same time. Incredible. But we've spent a lot of time on language competence.
Sure.
It makes me think of how we often say someone is bilingual.
Yeah.
As if that's the end-all be-all of translation. What are we missing? What other competencies come into play?
You're right. Just being bilingual is like having the ingredients for a cake but not knowing how to bake.
Yeah.
There's another layer of competence called textual competence, understanding how different types of writing work.
So it's not enough to know the words, you have to know the music they're playing. Like a love poem has a different rhythm than a news report.
Exactly. Each type of text or genre, as it's formally called, has its own unique conventions and style. A good translator needs to recognize these nuances in both the sort and target languages.
Okay, so give me an example. How does textual competence play out in Bible translation, where you have so many different genres all mashed together?
Let's take narratives, for example. Think about how stories are told in different cultures, the way characters are introduced, the pacing, how the plot builds to a climax. All these elements can vary widely. A translator needs to understand how to adapt these narrative elements to make sense in the target language and culture.
So you can't just translate the words of a joke. You have to translate the humor itself. That's got to be tricky. But what about something like poetry? Translating rhymes and metaphors across cultures seems like a whole other level of difficulty.
It definitely is. Poetry is all about imagery, rhythm, and emotional impact. Sometimes a literal translation just won't cut it. A skilled translator might even shift from poetry to prose, prioritizing clarity over trying to force a rhyme scheme that doesn't work in the target language.
Wow, so sometimes you have to make tough choices to preserve the heart of the message. That makes me think about the letters in the New Testament. Those have such a strong voice and tone. How do you capture that in another language?
That's where understanding the intent behind the words becomes crucial. We call those hortatory texts things like sermons or epistles. Is the tone encouraging, rebuking, instructional? A good translator needs to consider not just the words, but the intended emotional and spiritual impact on the original audience and find a way to recreate that in a new cultural context.
It seems like a translator needs to be a master of disguise, slipping into different genres and voices effortlessly. But does this mean they need to be an expert in every type of writing imaginable?
Thankfully, no. No one can be a master of everything. Translators often specialize in certain types of text, building expertise over time. It's a continuous journey of learning and discovery.
Okay, that's reassuring. But speaking of learning, we haven't even touched on subject matter competence. Dr. Payton uses the example of needing musical knowledge to write about music. How does that apply to Bible translation, where you're dealing with history, culture, law, poetry? It's a whole curriculum in one book.
That's one of the biggest challenges, and it's easy to fall into the trap of assuming there's just one Bible culture.
Yeah.
The reality is much more complex. We're talking about thousands of years of history, a multitude of cultural influences, different social structures, beliefs about the world. It's a massive undertaking to grapple with all of that.
You're making my head spin.
Mm-hmm.
So how do translators even begin to tackle this massive web of cultures and historical periods? Do they have to become archaeologists and anthropologists on top of everything else?
While you don't need a PhD in archaeology, a good translator approaches the text with a deep sense of curiosity and respect for the historical context. It's about looking for the common threads, the broader cultural patterns that run through the biblical world. For instance, ideas about the spirit world, honor and shame, how people viewed the relationship with the divine herd. These were powerful forces in ancient societies.
So it's like you're piecing together a cultural jigsaw puzzle, trying to understand the rules of a completely different game.
That's a great way to put it. And here's where things get really interesting. Modern non-Western cultures can actually provide valuable insights into those ancient mindsets. They can help us understand how people thought and interacted in those times.
You're saying that looking at cultures that exist today can shed light on the past. That's fascinating. Do you have an example?
Absolutely. Dr. Payton talks about the story of Paul and the snake bite on the island of Malta. Remember how the islanders react? They assume he's a murderer who escaped divine justice, and then when he doesn't die, they think he must be a god. This reaction, as strange as it might seem to us, actually mirrors beliefs about the spirit world and divine judgment found in some cultures even today.
Wow, that connection is mind-blowing. It really highlights the idea that the past isn't some distant, irrelevant thing. It's alive in the way we think and interact with the world even today. Okay, so we've talked about language, genre, and this incredibly rich tapestry of cultures. But Dr. Payton mentions one more competence that I'm dying to unpack: transfer competence. What is it, and how is it different from just being bilingual?
That's a great question. Think of it this way. Bilingualism is like owning two different sets of tools. Transfer competence is the ability to use those tools simultaneously, effortlessly switching between them, and even inventing new tools on the fly.
Okay, I'm intrigued. Paint a picture for me. What does this look like in action?
Imagine you're watching an American Sign Language interpreter. They're not just translating words. They're bridging two entirely different modes of communication, spoken English and sign language, and doing it in real time with incredible speed and accuracy. That's transfer competence in action.
That's amazing. It's like mental juggling, but with languages instead of bowling pins. So is this something you're either born with or not? Or can you actually train your brain to become this kind of linguistic acrobat?
It's definitely a skill that can be developed through practice and training. Think of it like learning a musical instrument. The more you play, the more intuitive and fluid your movements become. It's the same with translation. The more you work between languages, the more you develop that rapid-fire, instinctive connection between meaning and expression.
So it's not just about knowing the notes, it's about feeling the music.
Exactly. And this is where a fascinating study comes in. Researchers compared professional translators to foreign language teachers, both groups highly skilled in the respective areas.
You'd think foreign language teachers would be naturals at translation, right?
Uh-huh. You'd assume so. But the study found that the professional translators consistently produced translations that were more accurate, more natural sounding, and captured the nuances of the original text more effectively.
That's really telling. It really underscores that transfer competence is a specialized skill, not just a byproduct of being bilingual.
Absolutely. And here's something to consider. Dr. Payton's notes also touch on a whole range of other skills that enhance a translator's work. Research skills, editing, using translation software, even the ability to give and receive constructive feedback. It's a multifaceted skill set.
It sounds like we could do a whole other deep dive just on those additional skills. But before we get sidetracked, I have to ask, we've covered the what of translation skills. What about the who? What kind of mindset does it take to excel in this field, especially the demanding world of Bible translation?
That's a brilliant question. The mindset is as crucial as the technical skills. It's like having a high-powered sports car. Without the right driver, it's not going anywhere.
So what are the hallmarks of a skilled translator's mindset? What makes them different?
Humility is paramount. A good translator understands they're not the author, but a messenger. It's about faithfully conveying the meaning without imposing personal interpretations or biases.
It's about getting out of the way of the text, letting it speak for itself. That makes me think of those times when you read a translation and it feels clunky or awkward, almost like the translator is trying too hard to put their own stamp on it.
That's a great observation. And that brings us to another important quality: detachment. You have to be able to step outside your own cultural and linguistic framework and truly try to see the world through the eyes of the target audience.
Have you ever encountered a situation where cultural differences created a real challenge in translation?
Oh, absolutely. One that comes to mind is translating the concept of heart in the Bible. In many cultures, it's associated purely with emotions. But in the biblical world, the heart often represents the seat of intellect and will.
So you couldn't just translate heart literally. You'd have to find a way to convey that deeper, more complex meaning within the framework of a different worldview.
Exactly. And that leads us to another key ingredient in the translator's mindset: patience. Translation is rarely quick or easy. It's a meticulous process of research, careful word choices, and often multiple rounds of revisions and refinements.
It's like those instant translation apps everyone uses these days.
Yeah.
They might be fine for getting the gist of a restaurant menu, but when it comes to something as nuanced and layered as the Bible, you need a far more thoughtful and deliberate approach.
Couldn't agree more. It's a craft honed over time through dedication and practice. And that brings us to another vital aspect: collaboration. Bible translation, especially large-scale projects, is rarely a solo endeavor. It involves teams of translators, consultants, reviewers, and often community members all working together to ensure the translation is accurate, clear, and culturally relevant.
It sounds like it takes a village to translate a text.
It often does, and that requires strong communication skills, a willingness to listen to diverse perspectives, and the ability to work harmoniously towards a shared goal.
So you're not just a wordsmith, you're a team player. But there's one more quality I'm curious about. That spark of passion that drives people to devote their lives to this intricate work. What makes someone truly excel in this field?
I'd say it's a healthy dose of curiosity, a passion for language, a thirst for knowledge, and a fascination with the intricate ways meaning is constructed and conveyed across cultures. Those are the hallmarks of a truly gifted translator.
It's like they're explorers, charting the vast landscapes of language and uncovering hidden treasures of meaning along the way.
Beautifully put. Ultimately, I think the best translators approach their work with a sense of wonder and a deep appreciation for the power of language to connect people across cultures and generations.
It's been so eye-opening to explore the world of translation with you today. We often take for granted the skill and dedication it takes to bring these texts to life in new languages.
I agree. And I hope our deep dive has encouraged our listeners to appreciate not just the what of translation, but the who, the talented individuals who work tirelessly behind the scenes to make these words sing in new and meaningful ways.
So as we wrap up, I'd like to leave you with this thought. Think about a time when you encountered a translation that just didn't quite work, whether it was a book, a movie, or even a simple sign. What do you think went wrong? What skills might have been missing? And how might a deeper understanding of these competencies have led to a better outcome? Until next time, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep diving deep.